Wonderful. Well, welcome all of you. This is the first in a two-part kind of series, but neither of them require the others. Today is obviously about the church's money and spending and budgets and income and how to get things for free. Tomorrow's talk is more about personal career aspirations, how to interview, how to get the best deal, how to spot good positions, etc. So if you're wanting to improve your own career or to start a career or to be able to advise other people on how to get a career started, if you don't already know, tomorrow we'll talk about this in place here in Indianapolis. My name is Matthew Losh. I'm director of sacred music at the Cathedral of St. Simon and Jude in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. If you've never been to Phoenix, go. What a fantastic place. It's beautiful every day of the year, except right now when it's a little bit hot for some folks, but I still wear a suit every day and I'm comfortable. So
no humidity, right?
No humidity, so you're not sticky like this is. This feels hotter than Phoenix does, unless you're in the sun in Phoenix. As long as you stay in the shade, Phoenix is a beautiful, beautiful place.
Do they have trees there?
Just
palm trees, yes. Lots and lots of palm trees. And it's a wonderful diocese. Our bishop wrote a fantastic document called Singing the Mass. It was a four-part series. If you haven't read that, read it. With the exception of Marquette, it is the strongest statement, I believe, by a U.S. bishop on sacred music, singing the propers, singing the Mass. And it clearly has resonated with musicians and clergy throughout Phoenix. You'll stop into a regular suburban parish in Phoenix and find a fully sung English Mass often. I moved out to Phoenix in 2012, end of 2012, to take a job at a large suburban parish that had been a life team parish for its entire existence of 10 years. Life team began in Phoenix and still kind of thrives there in a sort of subdued way. And I kind of said, you know, well, let's experiment with this and see if I can get fired. So I went in there and, you know, we went from praise and worship music one week to the next weekend having chanted introit to communion, chanted psalm, chanted alleluia, and I did an offertory hymn and a recessional hymn, chanted ordinary, from nothing. But because the priests were chanting the Mass for 2 years or so before I arrived, since the implementation of the new missal, you know, it wasn't the disaster that I think it would have been any place else in the world. The parish, so often people will say, you know, if you change the music, the collection's going to go down. I don't know if this actually reflects on me and sacred music, but the parish was averaging, you know, between $28,000 to $40,000 a week in collection. My first Sunday, when we did all the chant, our collection was $110,000, the highest in the history of the parish. Now, whether that was coincidence or chant, I'm not sure. Obviously, it didn't stay that high the whole time. Otherwise, you know, I'd be there and driving a Corvette or something by now.
They didn't give you a finder's fee.
But, you know, after about 9 months, the staff would always get the finance committee minutes, and the finance committee, somebody on there had said, you know, the collections are down, it must be because of the music. And so I decided, well, let's do some digging, and I actually went through 4 years of collection numbers and envelope numbers with the parish's permission, of course, and it's actually exactly the same. Within $200 year to year. So to say, you know, if somebody else says, you know, the music is driving people away, always look into that and make sure it's true. There were fewer envelopes being used, but the collection was exactly the same. And the number of envelopes was down maybe 50, you know. And when you have 1,000 envelopes being used, 50 is kind of it's a small number.
May I interject?
Yes.
And keep in mind, it's not always when you implement higher church music or it goes in reverse too. We worked for 6 years at our parish implementing the propers in English and Latin, doing Latin extraordinary form masses and Latin Novus Ordos, Otter and Sam, Home Nine Yards, and it was cut in a week with the onset of the new pastor. And I was told, you will be obedient or you will be looking for a job. So we are now down to a For Him sandwich and the People's Mass and the Heritage Mass, which, and we have lost over half of our position. So it works in reverse as well.
If you want to take one of these and pass it on, this is a little handout I put out together for this breakout. Happy Canada Day, by the way, for those of you who are
Canadian
or wish you were Canadian, as we celebrate 32 years of independence from Britain.
Are you Canadian?
I am Canadian, yeah. Yes, by birth, yes.
How many parish family registrations, those the numbers that you just reported about that?
I think it was, I think they would say 4,000 families. The church seated about 2,000. And, you know, the masses were full. You know, I spent 5 years in Ohio, and I was unfamiliar with, you know, a really full church until I moved to Arizona. Southwest is really where, you know, Catholicism is thriving in a very unique way. This Easter Vigil at the cathedral, I walked into the sacristy about an hour before Mass, and I said, sacristan, well, how many confirmations are there? And somebody probably told me at some point along the way, but I must have buried it somewhere in the back of my mind. And he said, 75. And I said, oh, I might have to go print off some more chant now. So I'm not sure what numbers are elsewhere, but I never saw, you know, that high of a number anyplace else that I've worked, Canada, Ohio, Michigan. It's very different in Phoenix. My assistant, Gabriel, he's my Spanish assistant, is here this week. He works at the Cathedral of the Spanish Masses, but he also has another parish. I saw him on Easter Sunday, and I said, well, how'd the vigil go over at the other place, Gabriel? And he said, well, you know, we started at 8 p.m., and we finished around 2. How many confirmations, Gabriel? 300. And I thought, oh, this is a very different place. So, yes, I've put together, you know, a couple fictitious budgets based a little bit in reality. I spoke to a couple folks, and I kind of piecemealed some things together. And you see, you know, St. Pius X is kind of a large, vibrant, urban parish. They have a full-time director of music, kind of full-time assistant director of music, and a full-time organist. They spend a lot of money repairing their large pipe organ and multiple pianos. That's why the service and repair is so high. St. Apollonia is kind of a, you know, run-of-the-mill blue-collar parish with a full-time music director, and that's it as far as staff. That $5,000 of hourly musicians is for instrumentalists at Christmas and Easter and things like that. They spend too much money on sheet music. You see the $2,500 there. They send their music director to one conference per year. St. Pius X, by the way, has a paid choir. That's why the $120,000 is there and goes year-round. Then our little small parish there at the bottom, you know, has one newly graduated music director who took a very small salary and who works very hard at doing church music there. But, you know, those budget numbers are very small, and those are actually very, very close to a parish that I spoke to the music director of and kind of got his numbers from. And he's not necessarily happy with those numbers, but he's doing the best he can. And in our talks about the budget, I kind of said, well, you know, is there any place that you could have it increase? He really, you know, kind of said, you know, this is pretty much the top limits for the parish. We talked a little bit about how he overcomes that, and there's only 3 masses per week, so I mean he's doing okay, but you know, that's kind of a very, very minimalistic parish for having a full-time music director. St. Bernardine has a full-time director of music, an organist, and a part-time, or no, full-time assistant. Then they spend a lot of money on a bunch of things. Hospitality. I've had a hospitality budget at every church I've worked at full-time, and I've never quite figured out what exactly it's supposed to be for. I think it's supposed to be for me, you know, to have a choir party and things like that. Mm-hmm. But when I talked to the guy who this budget is loosely based upon, and he said there was $5,000 in hospitality, I said, well, what do you use that on exactly? And he really couldn't answer the question. I think there's a lot of there, and it probably gets shifted to other areas that need more funding. Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot of choir parties. They spend a lot of money on sheet music. They spend a lot of money on printed supplies. They spend way too much on dues and subscriptions, though you should certainly subscribe and become a member of the Church Music Association of America if you haven't yet.
That's only $48.
It's only $48, so really, no.
$250 for the whole paper.
Every single church in this list except St. Apollonia, you know, can. Oh, no, all of them can. Yeah, they all have it. It's usually spent, you know, on NPM memberships, which are a little bit more expensive. You don't get as nice of a journal. You get a little magazine. And sometimes parishes will use those dues and subscriptions for, you know, those packages of octavos that come in the mail. And, you know, you quickly recycle 99% of them. And it costs, does anybody know what exactly it costs? I think it's $50 a year per company you do. So if I was cutting something, you know, that would be what I would cut. Especially in 2014, a lot of them have samples on their website. You can go click, and yeah, it has the annoying sample thing through it, but you can still, you can do without the sample octavos being sent to you in 2014. It's time to jump into the future. St. Benedict does not have a really good music program. They pay their organist per mass, $75 to $100, whatever it takes. They have an electric organ and a piano, so that's what service and repair covers. They spend a lot of money on music because they need all sorts of octavos, but they cannot afford a full-time music director. And I'm not sure if that's true or not, but that those figures are actually based in reality of a parish on the East Coast, about halfway down the country. And then St. Cecilia Parish has a really, really nice music program, and this is also based in reality. All of them except St. Apollonia are based in reality. I couldn't find anybody that would kind of be like St. Apollonia and give me their numbers. But St. Cecilia, you know, has a full-time music director who makes a nice salary, a full-time assistant that makes a good salary, too. They have a paid choir from Advent until the second Sunday of Easter. So that's what that $50,000 goes to. Including, you know, feast days and things in that time. They have a pipe organ, which requires maintenance, which is why that service and repair is high. They send their music director and associate to at least one conference, and sometimes two per year, which is why that number is a little bit high. They don't spend a penny on sheet music. All of their music is public domain or newly composed music that is allowed to be printed for free. There is a lot of that out there. Does anybody see any of these kind of reflecting their own personal situation? Or I tried to get, you know, a variety of things from the very, very small budget to, you know, the few gigantic budgets. And obviously, you know, if you looked at these things and you were sitting down to rework your budget, you know, I'm sure all of us could see a couple things we could slash and move money to more important places. When I got to the Cathedral of St. Simon and Jude, I saw the actual bottom line budget number, and I was so very, very happy. And I kind of looked up the thing, and it was really, really well maintained. We have a sheet music budget of $150 a year, which I think is absolutely fantastic. You know, we don't really need any brand new sheet music. I bought, you know, $150 worth of sheet music, but in general, you know, there's so much really good music out there. Buying one or two pieces a year is really kind of I think it's very, very maintainable. I bought a few pieces from the OCP Trinitas collection. If you've never seen any of that stuff, it is quite good. And sometimes we think of OCP as being, you know, this dark entity, what did Jeffrey Tucker call it? The black hand behind bad church music in his one article. I mean, the Trinitas series does have a lot of really, really good stuff. Pro Sacrum Convivium of Parker, we just did a few weeks ago. Really, really fantastic church music. Very, very charming. And very, very, in that piece's case, very, very Catholic sounding. So, whenever I see, you know, sheet music budget of $5,000, it kind of boggles my mind because I think, well, that's, you know, 10 choral masses that I could put on with the really good singers. And why would I spend that much money on sheet music? So moving on from those, and we can come back and reference these fake hidden identity parishes as we move along. My basic rules for budgets in what I tell people that come to me for advice or for help are, you know, realize the limitations of your parish. If you're, you know, at a parish with 400 families and it's blue collar, you know, you're probably not going to make six figures, and you're probably not going to have, you know, 16 paid singers every mass. It's unrealistic unless, you know, some millionaire dies and leaves the whole music program. And even then, you know, who knows what would happen to that. So you have to be very, very realistic. And sometimes people will come to me and they'll say, well, you know, I'd love to have this and this and this and this and this. Well, I was trying to tell them, you know, well, rather than thinking about this and this and this and this and this, you know, try and, you know, look at the most important 10% of what you'd like and work towards that with keeping the rest of that in the mind for the future, always pushing for the future. If you have a budget, I recommend always spending every penny, but I mean spending every penny wisely, never spending frivolously. But you know, if the finance committee sees, you know, that you spent nothing on sheet music rather than $150, they'll say, well, you don't need $150 next year, you're good. So you probably, you know, as long as the money's there, if your business manager comes to you and says, you know, we're broke, collections are down, don't spend all the money in your budget, then obviously I would certainly listen to him. But if things are going as planned, I always spend every single penny, and I never ask for anything to be cut unless I ask for something else to be raised exponentially. My job that I took when I first went to Arizona, my successor there that I kind of handpicked is a really nice 23-year-old organist. It's her first job. Very, very talented girl, but she had a meeting before the Finance Council for the budget, and I talked to her afterwards, and I was like, well, how did it go? She's like, it was great. They loved that I asked for so much less money than you asked for the program. And I thought, oh, you're never going to be able to get that money back. So, you know, you always want to try and push, because if you don't, I mean, it's nice, especially if you're that church is still not completed. They might be able to, you know, finish some things with the building quicker, so she might be doing that better. But you know, you're cutting your foot off a little bit in that if you're able to spend that money very, very wisely and to have a really good music program. That's probably a good thing to do. I've just put some categories there. You know, salary, sometimes that's included in your budget, sometimes it's not. I've seen it both ways. I included one of these just for the sake of kind of seeing where money is going and other musicians. You know, fundraising expenses. Does anybody have a concert series? Concert series can be very expensive, or they can be very, very inexpensive. If you're flying in artists, and you know, having to put them in hotels, and especially if you're flying in choirs, you know, things get kind of expensive. if you have good local music, I've run a concert series before with zero expenses, other than, you know, if we were splitting the door with the choir or whatever. I was at a small parish in Ohio, and we had a concert series of about 6 concerts per year, and the cost to the parish was literally $0, and that income that we had from that concert series did allow us to do some nice things, you know, strings at Easter for an orchestral mass, things that probably couldn't have been budgeted, at least not really, really professionally budgeted, but we were able to do because of that concert series. Some concert series, you know, aren't a method of income, they're just hoping to break even and to do it for the sake of art and beauty, and my goodness, if you can do it, please do it. I know I was talking to Paul Thornock, music director of the Cathedral of Columbus, Ohio, earlier today, and we were talking about his concert series, because he asked what I was talking about today, and they aim to break even every year. So if they're having a good year and they're up $10,000, the first thing they do with the concert the next year is they have a gigantic name brought in or a gigantic group brought in. So it really kind of, if you're able to do that sort of thing, you're able to do it successfully, I really think it's worthwhile as far as really exposing people to wonderful music. If it becomes a cost to the parish, you know, you certainly want a concert series not to be a burden to your music program. If I had the choice between a really great concert series and, you know, 4 paid singers every weekend, I'm taking 4 paid singers every weekend. That's a way to instantly make things better. Conferences, retreats, and workshops are a very, very important thing, not only for the music director, but, you know, continuing ed for members of the program, for assistants, you know, anybody that you can get to one of these conferences. There's obviously this one put on by the Church Music Association of America. Father Columba Kelly puts on several week-long things that are all very, very worthwhile. I know the Liturgical Institute and Adam Bartlett are trying to get something together for next summer, so you might see more things about that. And beyond traveling, you know, there's a lot of local things if your diocese is good. I know whenever in Ohio, when we would have diocesan workshops and stuff, I would try and bring everybody that I could, every member of my choir that I could get to go. And so there is a cost involved in that, but it's so important. We can really, you know, push what we're doing and continue leading people to better ways of doing sacred music. So hands up if you use a permanent hymnal or permanent book in your church. Okay. Disposables. Worship aids. Okay. So lots of things going on here. Obviously, if you're printing worship aids, there's an expense to that every year. If you are doing the seasonal missalette thing, that usually doesn't actually come out of a music budget. I've never seen it come out of a music budget. If it does come out of your music budget, you should, you know, have that relocated to a liturgy section or something, because if you're just dealing with music, you really shouldn't be ordering missalettes, and it takes some of the blood off of your hands. The blood of the trees, dignity, sacred liturgy. If you don't have any permanent books in your pews, I strongly suggest getting the Lumen Christi Missal put out by Luminary Publications and waiting until they put out the Lumen Christi Hymnal, which will be the hymnal that will revolutionize the world. Really, it's going to be fantastic. I've been talking to Bartlett about it for a year now and kind of working on some of these things. And, it will change everything. Really just a fantastic book. The engraving is fantastic. It's SATB in the Pew edition. It is it's unbelievably wonderful. And it should be out you know, sometime in 2014. So don't order anything else yet. Unless you're absolutely sure you love it. I'm not sure that I love anything that's out there right now. Office supplies, you know, whenever I see office supplies on a church budget list, I always say, whatever. I'll, you know, pirate pens off of my colleagues, borrow paper from somebody's desk, walk away. But, you know, obviously, you know, there's always an office supplies section of the budget. And if I'm able to borrow from that to put someplace else, I always do. You know, I'm not, unless you're required to buy your own paper for worship aids, you know, that's kind of it's a very unuseful category, and I never really pay attention to it. Furniture, you know, you need a new desktop computer or something, your chair breaks, you know, your desk has no handles and keeps pinching your hand in it. That's what these things are for, and that's what I'm dealing with right now. I've pinched my hands about 10 times over the last 6 months. Dues and subscriptions, of course, you want to become a member of the Church Music Association of America, $48 sometime by the end of this week. Maintenance repair is very, very important. Please never, ever leave a pipe organ to languish. If you need to fundraise in order to maintain your instrument, please, please, please do, because your successor will thank you for it, and this successor will thank you for it, et cetera, et cetera, down the line. If you let an instrument languish, you will be remembered else, otherwise. And then miscellaneous, every budget I've ever had has had this miscellaneous category at the bottom, and I always ask the business administrator, what is that exactly for? And they're never able to give me an exact answer. It's, you know, it's for other things. And so I use it always for pizza dinners, because that's where your money is best spent.
Pizza dinners.
Yeah. No, paid singers.
Paid singers.
Yeah, no pizza dinners. I already told you I use the hospitality budget for something else, too. It's the Canadian accent. Happy Canada Day. talking about priorities, you know, when you get to a parish and you're looking at the budget for the first time, I always think, you know, take some time and really think about what's important, and try and make your budget reflect that. And if you're talking to the finance council and they want to know why this is your priority, you know, have a very well-reasoned explanation for why. Just saying, you know, it'll make things better is okay, but they're not musicians and they might want to know how it will make things better. So if you're proposing, you know, a four-part paid quartet at the, you know, solemn mass or 11 o'clock mass each week, if they really challenge you on that, say, well, head over to Parish X for their mass and, you know, listen to the difference. And there's a chance, you know, they might go there and they might actually hear the difference. And hopefully they will hear the difference. Hopefully they'll like it and they won't say, well, what if we just hired some bongos and a guitar? You know, that might be money better spent. But hopefully they're, you know, good faithful Catholics who realize what the church teaches. Matters of sacred music. So prioritizing is very, very important. If you just kind of slop together a budget without knowing what's really important to you and what you envision your program being, people will know that. I spend a lot of time working with numbers, and I'm not very good at math, so there's always a calculator and lots of things scribbled, as you can kind of see here on this budget sheet. Double, triple check everything and know things. Big vision and goals for the future, you know, it's not only what you want, it's also what the pastor wants. And you always have to remember that. Unless the pastor is completely, unless he completely trusts you and says what you do is what I'll like. That doesn't happen very often. Does anybody have that situation? Whatever you'd like to do is fine. That's great if you have it. It doesn't usually happen. So you have to work together with your pastor. I have a meeting with the rector of the cathedral every single Tuesday. They can range in length from 3 minutes to, you know, 3 hours. We're on the same page at all times because of that. If you don't have a regular, it doesn't necessarily have to be weekly, but if you don't have a regular meeting with the pastor or rector or whoever is in charge of your the administration of your parish, you know, you might want to think about that. it's probably a very, very wise thing to do. Showing results, you know, if you hire four paid singers for your 11 o'clock mass every weekend, and the music stays, you know, just okay, and the finance committee says, well, why are we spending, you know, $18,000 a year on these paid singers? Everything sounds exactly the same as it always has. So you really have to, you have to show results. You have to, it has to be concrete enough that non-musicians can actually hear the difference. And if you get four university vocal students in there, it should be, if your current parish choir is like the average parish choir you would find if you walked into a random church that you picked out of a hat on a Sunday, and suddenly there are four paid singers there, everybody will know the difference. Even non-musicians, even people that don't really like music or don't like sacred music will know the difference. It's dramatic. Especially if the age of the present choir is on the upper hand of the spectrum, getting some younger voices in there instantly will spark some interest from the congregation, and hopefully will show results for that. Spending money, get everything you can for free. I put some things there. Luminarypublications.com has scores and accompaniment editions of chants for every Sunday of the year. They are fantastic. They're also available in book form downstairs. Green book called the Simple Lumen Christi Simple Gradual. And it's a fantastic book. It's worth having hard copy, but also it's worth having, you know, these free scores all at our fingertips. Hymnary.org, I love and use frequently. If you do worship aids and you don't want to pay for, you know, licensing.org or whatever it is, or onelicense.net. If you're not doing four hymn sandwiches all the time, you can probably get by with just using hymnary.org. I believe you can. The scores aren't always the perfect scan, but they're usually good enough that you can clean things up in Microsoft Paint and fix things enough that you can put them on a worship aid. I'm kind of low-tech, but I'm sure Shonak would think of a better way to clean those up, but that's how I do things. MusicaSacra.com/Weber is an index to Father Weber's chants. They're kind of difficult to work your way through and find out what's what, but they're worth actually taking the time to do.
Control-F is a very useful tool there.
Yes.
It's a very long list.
It is a long list, and so you'll click on the thing and it'll be an index. If you click on New Gradual, that's where all the propers are, and some of them are very, very good. If you saw his new book downstairs, put up by Ignatius, it's all psalm tones. These are not. These are kind of a old Salem style English chant, kind of ornate. Sometimes there's multiple settings. There's the most ornate, there's kind of ornate, and then there's a psalm tone setting. But it gives you a little variety and some interesting things. Father Colombo Kelly, if you Google his name, you'll find his website. He has introits and communions, and he also has in those files, it's one big file of introits for every Sunday of the year, one big file of communions. He also has these little tiny refrains for the congregation. I would never recommend using them, but if you're using his things and your pastor says, well, the congregation needs to sing something during the entrance and something during the communion, those could be useful. But they're so short and so elementary that I actually think they're a little bit insulting to the congregation. Whereas the Luminary Publications, antiphons, most congregations can sing the short ones and they're less rudimentary. The Gradual A Simplex is online. If you Google Gradual A Simplex PDF, you will find it. It's a little bit difficult to actually find the website. You can find it there, and its legality is, I think it might be legitimate. I don't know. Do you know, is it legit or no?
It's all online. The simplex?
Simplex.
I think we have commissioner for it.
I don't think we do. I don't know. You might want to check with Salem if you, if you're
Well, the simplex is published by the Vatican.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I remember when it was put online, there was a little bit of a controversy, so I almost omitted it from this list, but I think it is useful for many parishes, so I put it on there, but I do give that warning. The Gregorian Missal is online on the CMAA website. The Gradualia Romanum is online on CC Watershed. Other free resources, I forgot from this list, the most important resource in the world for singing motets, cpdl.org, the Choral Public Domain Library.
That's how we...
I don't know, but if you type in cpdl.org, it goes.
Yeah,
that's what I do. So it is, you know, if you don't want to spend any money on sheet music, there's a motet there for every Sunday, or three motets for every Sunday. And there's actually, they actually have it listed by Sunday now for recommendations, so it's a fantastic resource.
The advanced search tool is really useful, too.
Yeah, for voicing.
An alto bass piece or whatever.
Yeah.
You can search
by voicing. It's very, very cool. What a fantastic thing. We're living in a great time for church music, I have to say. This is the most wonderful world. Humans make the biggest difference. This is kind of my end to spending, which I've said a few times. You know, four paid singers at $100 a week for 43 weeks. That's about June till September till June. Is $17,200. It is the best $17,200 you will ever spend. If you're a church music director and right now you have no paid singers, you know, and you can't sell them on $17,200, try and sell them on 400 times four and do it for 4 weeks of Advent and blow them away. And then the next year say, remember Advent? Remember how great that was? Let's go back to that and let's do $17,200. It makes a tremendous difference for not a tremendous amount of money. Be wise in your spending, take everything seriously. Every dollar should be accounted for, keep records, double check them. If you have paid singers, triple check their timesheets. I spend about an hour double checking timesheets every month, and there's always errors in them. It's not necessarily them trying to cheat the church. Sometimes it's actually them cheating themselves of a Sunday. Musicians are irresponsible folks sometimes and just don't really keep track of things very well. So I always keep track of things for them because sometimes we have to be responsible ones. Income. Does anybody have like a substantial way of bringing in income to their church right now, their music program? So your concert series is just kind of break even yours?
It's not allowed to make money, actually.
Oh, really?
We have to donate anything that's in residual of cost to charity. Oh. That's just the pastors. And it works.
And yours?
You know, I solicit donations from people in the parish, and I have different categories of giving, a benefactor, donor, sponsor. But again, we pretty much break even.
Yeah. Concert series, especially if you're going to try and do a really good one, you know, breaking even is probably the way to go because you're going to want to spend money on really good folks. Self-sufficiency is a very dangerous road. I once worked for a music program that the music director before me tried to pay for the entire program by his concert series. And it was the most ridiculous thing in the world. We had to do this concert series, and it was so much work, and it was the wrong way to do things. And something about the whole situation seemed very, very wrong. And luckily, we got a new pastor, and he kind of put a stop to that. But don't ever let somebody tell you, you know, you should raise all the money for your own program. Church music should be a major part of the budget of the church and should not, you know, be seen as a sideshow act to pay for itself. Is that yard sale really worth all the work? One church I worked at had this yard sale for the music program to pay for the music program. These old ladies that were in the choir were doing physical harm to themselves. doing this yard sale. And when I put it at the end of the yard sale, they all kind of said, okay. And, you know, the next year they came up to me and they said, that was the best thing in the world. But we would be sore for 2 weeks after this yard sale. And I thought, well, there's something very, very wrong if we're, you know, expecting these people to come and sing every Sunday as volunteers, do a choir rehearsal every week, and also, you know, break your back once a year doing a yard sale. Like big furniture having to be moved, and it was very disturbing. It happened the week after I started the job, and I kind of thought to myself, what have I gotten myself into? Why are we moving these armoires around the gym for musicians? Play to your program strengths. You know, if you have a choir of less than moderate abilities, is, you know, putting on a concert really the best thing to do? Do people really want to go to that concert? If the answer is yes, then do it. If your choir is going to be more of a liturgical choir, you know, stick with that. It's probably for the best. Okay, well, we have, you know, about 10 minutes left. Do we want to do, like, some discussion and talk about our situations or about problems or suggestions or ideas? Anybody have anything they'd like to talk about?
Well, I have a question, actually.
Sure.
This is sort of a roundtable thing. Our choir isn't paid. We have a paid director, and I think some of the music leads, section leads, are given a stipend, as is the organist. We don't have a permanent facility, so we're, you know, living in somebody else's space and acting as, I guess, tenant. One of the things that our music program is ascribed to doing is bringing in people to the parish. We're traditional mass, and we do strictly Gregorian chant, polyphonic, classic stuff. Is there a metric that anybody uses that correlates the presence of a choir to the attendance and or the gain in church registrations? I mean, has anyone calibrated that at all, or is that even a metric that is ever considered?
I think every situation is different. I did a Tridentine Mass for 4 years in Windsor, Ontario, the rather renowned program there, now at Assumption Church. WindsorLatinMass.org has a wonderful website. Lots of good resources there too, for free. When I did the Mass, we were in a kind of, I wouldn't say ugly church, but it was a less than beautiful edifice with an organ that was, you know, it was a pipe organ, but it was a little bit too big for the space. Carpeted walls that kind of, you know, deadened the sound. And just some bad situations. They had just come out of a nursing home. The Windsor Tridentine Mass actually began in a nursing home during the SARS epidemic in Canada. So when you walked in, they had to question you about whether you'd been to Asia and spray you down with disinfectant and rub you. The nurses actually had to rub their hands, your hands for you, to show that you actually had sanitized yourself. So when they left the nursing home, they had about 8 people in the congregation. When I took over the Mass, it was about 20 people, and at that point, we decided we'd get a paid choir in there. One gentleman kind of paid the bill for the paid choir. And when I left 4 years later, we had about a steady congregation of 80, with sometimes it's going up to 120, especially if we advertise Psalm High Mass or, you know, orchestral mass or something like that. Today, they're in a nicer building. They have a 10-person paid choir, and they have about 200 to 250 people a weekend going to Mass there. Is the music what's grown it? Is it time? Is it nicer building? I can't answer that. Do churches with better music have more people at them? In some cases? Not in every case. Any other comments, questions? Yes.
In addition to section leaders, paid section leaders, we also have 4 high school choral scholars, and they receive $100 a month for stipend, and that's a pretty low cost way of, you know, bringing more young people into the choir too. Mm-hmm. We have a high school in the parish, so it's you know, it's easy to kind of get them in there. But then you have eight singers that can, if the rest of your choir can't pull off the motet, you at least have eight singers that can.
Or don't show up because they have right. other obligations.
Right.
That's great. That's great. It's a great idea. I never thought
really
about that. Anything else on budgeting or spending or right. Well, if you ever find yourself in the desert, please swing by the Cathedral of St. Simon and Jude. If you are interested at all in our program and would like to see what we do on a weekly basis, I stole worship aids on my way out of the cathedral on Sunday. I'll leave them up here. Feel free to take them because they're just going to end up in the recycling bin. Anyways, but thank you so much. My contact information is on there. If you have any questions or you want to talk about anything, I'm renowned for helping musicians not get fired. So if you ever find yourself in a bind, give me a call or send me an email. If it's, I'm about to be fired, please send it to my personal email and not to my boss's email where, my superiors might be reading it. So. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful colloquium. Sign up for